Well, good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on Novem Radio. Yeah, I know. I still sound real froggy, and there's a reason for that. That's because I am. I belong in an oxygen tent, but too much has been going on this week. I just couldn't stay away anymore. So if there's some pauses tonight, it is my grabbing the mute button so I can cough. And thanks to all the emails from everybody who suggested tea and garlic and honey and olive pits and, you know, snake oil, and I really appreciate it. But usually when I get one of these viral bronchial things, I just call my doctor and ask for some of that strange Tushin X and float off on a little pink cloud. Many thanks, though, to Jeff Farias for filling in for me the last couple of nights, and for Ian Huff, who engineered and co-produces, for pulling those extra pulling that extra duty. Jeff and Ian did 6 hours of talk radio those nights, and as Bush would say, it's hard work. Thanks, guys. So what have I missed? Torquemada Gonzalez's continued perjury, Pat Tillman's murder, for God's sake. Tony Snow's meltdown, drunk astronauts, the Obama-Hillary World Wrestling Foundation-style smackdown, exploding cheese. I was laying in bed, and I saw that. I called Kathy, and I said, take the cough medicine away from me. I think I just saw something about cheese with wires coming out of it and terrorist attacks. And she said, now, and patted my head and walked out. Let's see. Did I miss anything? Oh, yeah. The killer cat. The cat that wanders around this hospice and selects the people that are going to die. And everybody's going, wow, what a cat. Okay. Why not stop him? Why not, I don't know, get him out of the hospice? The cat is killing the people. That's obvious. They're saying, well, the cat is psychic. And the cat knows when someone's going to die and curls up with them. And sure enough, within 4 or 5 hours, a person dies. Nonsense. The cat is selecting people and going in there and killing them. I don't know how. Cheney gets a new heart tomorrow. I'm wondering, will he make Bush acting president when he goes in? Drunk astronauts. No. Tap water in the bottles, Aquafina. What's next? Poison products from China? Never mind on that one. Michael Moore has been subpoenaed? And the hearings on Gonzalez. You know, I desperately tried Tuesday. It was a toss-up. Do I drink more Tushin X and float away, or do I watch the hearings on Gonzalez? Which would make me higher? And I tried to find the hearings on Gonzalez. All I got from the networks, the cable and over there networks, was coverage on Nicole Richie and Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton and that magic cat. That killer, murderous cat. It's been a bizarre week. I'm sorry I've been gone. But I haven't been playing. I've been playing this, I have been playing a wonderful game called Try to Breathe Without Wheezing. Before we go any further, I just have to say I feel something. I don't know what it is, but something, some sort of compassion or a momentary flash of empathy for the people in Phoenix who dealt with this mid-air collision today of two helicopters that went down, taking all four people involved to their deaths. And, you know, we have the traffic copter situation here in Atlanta, too. And you get to know these reporters. You do. They're not weirdos like the anchors sometimes. These are The helicopter pilots are usually combat experienced or they're professional pilots, but so many of them have some sort of military experience, if not combat. And the reporters or producers who go along are usually the people at the stations who are on the lowest end of the pay scale. And it's a heartbreaker to hear about that sort of thing. Now, a lot of people can adopt a cynical attitude of, well, you know, why are they following a high-speed chase? Okay. I mean, that's one way to look at it. But still, it's just, I just wanted to mention for the people who are listening in Phoenix, we are aware, obviously, here in Atlanta and around the country of how, you know, as a television audience, you develop some kind of a sense of rapport. I mean, so many of us never meet these guys or these women, but we feel like we know them because they come into our homes every night at 6 o'clock. So just a mention of that, that's all. It's a real tragedy. Michael Moore says that the Bush administration has served him with a subpoena regarding his trip to Cuba. Which is nonsense. I hope Moore accepts the subpoena and goes to testify. This is like the Bush crime family putting a barrel in its own mouth. They want all of this as a part of the record. And besides, there's no basis for a subpoena here. The way this Trading with the Enemy Act regarding Cuba reads, that anyone involved in journalism can make the trip. And the government knows this, whoever has issued the subpoena. But this is the way it begins. This is the way you harass journalists or filmmakers when you are desperately, you know, you've got 18 months left to establish fascism on a 230-year tradition of almost democracy. So you go after the artists, you go after the poets, you go after the filmmakers, you go after the writers. You intimidate them first. And the rest of us would just follow in lockstep. So I hope Michael Moore accepts the subpoena and testifies. I think that would be great. Pope Benedict XVI, the former Nazi, has issued a stark warning about the danger approaching Europe. He calls it the Islamization of Europe. His spokesperson, who speaks with the full authority of the Catholic Church, is talking about a Muslim domination of Europe. The Pope made it clear that Christian Europe is under threat from a resurgent Islam. The Pope's spokesman talked of Islam not being a single force, but a religion of extremes, with extremists who, quote, turn to rifles for their goals, end quote. Now, it was just a year ago that the former Nazi Pope Benedict XVI enraged borderline psycho-Muslims worldwide with a speech linking Islam with violence. And, of course, that led to churches being burned in the West Bank, a nun being shot dead in a Somalian hospital, and the Iranian president accusing him of being in league with George Bush to repeat the Crusades. So it's been a year. Obviously, it's time for the former Nazi, now Pope, to stir things up again. And people wonder why I hate religion. Oh, my God. I'm still getting emails about my cough, my cold. Oh, I see a couple of you went to Google and looked up Tushin X. Yeah, it's wicked stuff. You have to let them hold, the pharmacy hold your firstborn when they give you a bottle of it. Wicked stuff. All right, we have a lot of stuff to cover tonight. And again, I apologize for the sound of my voice, but it's just hoarseness. We have some sounds for you tonight from Gonzo Gate over the last few days, or as John Stewart would call it, Mommy, why is the lying man still in charge of the Justice Department? And Kathy has put together a special Abu Gonzalez Good News Week. You got to hear this. From the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on Tuesday. When I heard this today, I said, that's just from one hearing? Plus, he croaked, we'll hear the exchange between North Carolina Democratic Representative Mel Watt and former FBI Director Robert Mueller in the House Judiciary Committee hearings yesterday. This is a clip where Mueller directly contradicts Gonzo's previous sworn testimony that there was no dissent within the Bush administration over the warrantless wiretapping. And then we have Tony Snow's unbelievable defense today of Gonzalez's perjury, saying that the wiretapping program that Mueller testified about was not the same wiretapping program that Gonzo testified about, which begs the question, how many illegal warrantless wiretapping programs are going on in the various rotten and worm-riddled branches of the Bush crime family? A, truth seekers?
Up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy. Who made me judge and jury hear it?
Twenty-one past the hour. Another big story that came out today is two American civilian contractors working for the Bush crime family in its invasion, occupation, and mass murder in Iraq, who are working on this U.S. Embassy construction project, this monstrosity that is going to cost the American taxpayers $500 million in Baghdad. Well, these contractors told Congress yesterday that foreign laborers were recruited deceptively and then trafficked, as in slavery, to Iraq to work at the site where they experienced physical abuse, substandard working conditions, and a refusal to be paid. Now, State Department officials are saying that's nonsense. And State Department officials are telling a House committee that inspections had not substantiated the worst reported abuses. You see how that works? How do you like that sentence? Well, senators the congresspersons, our inspections don't substantiate the worst reported abuses. Uh-huh. These bastards. Now, the information about all this was delivered at a hearing of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, that's Waxman's committee, on the allegations that you and I have known about for years of the waste and the fraud and this insanity in building this huge U.S. embassy. This is the one that can be seen from orbit around the planet. So far, the cost is around $600 million. If they finish this thing, it's going to be over $1 billion. You know it as well as I do. It is slated to be the largest, the largest embassy in the world. And it's being built by a Kuwaiti firm. Uh-huh. Now, according to reports from the Bush crime family, the Kuwaiti firm got the contract because no U.S. company would meet the terms. Now, what do you suppose that means? The labor practices that have been investigated by the Justice Department? Sure. Well, there are some career Justice Department people who are not going to let Gonzalez pull them into the outhouse hole that Gonzalez now finds himself. But there are career people in the Justice Department who are investigating all this, looking into allegations that these employees were so-called, were more or less shanghaied, to use an old term, into Iraq and not allowed to leave because the company, the Kuwaiti company, had taken their passports. Now, reports say they worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and made $60 a week, which works out to how much? Very quickly, $9 a day. How much an hour? Huh? $1.10? $1.20? They were physically and verbally abused. They had their salaries docked for petty infractions. It just goes on and on and on. And this dumb bastard in the White House has the audacity to continue to say that they, which is the rest of the world, hate us because we buy houses? They hate us because we have freedom? No, they hate us because we subcontract to some of Bush crime family business partners, in this case, the Al-Sabah family, the Kuwaiti royal family that owns everything in Kuwait, another one of those little democracies that Bush is always talking about. Well, actually, it's a kingdom, but if Bush wants to bring democracy, why not start in Kuwait or Saudi Arabia? Well, you know the answer to that as well as I do. But this is why they hate us. Is there anybody in the Middle East, is there anybody on the planet, besides we Americans, who don't understand the depth of the criminality of this filthy Bush administration? The answer? No, there isn't. Everyone knows it. And it's evidenced every single day. Every government, every business community, including our own, every union organizing organization, every single entity on the planet understands what the Bush crime family is doing. The people who don't understand to the degree that the rest of the world does is us. And why don't we? Because our media provides us with updates on Lindsay Lohan, Nicole Richie, and Paris Hilton.
Mike Malloy Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
26 before the hour. I'm finally glad to see that the newspaper of record, the New York Times, had an article yesterday about the Saudis' role in Iraq and what they are doing. We mentioned this the other night. Bush talks about the Iranians supporting the Iraqi insurgency, and the real culprits here are the Saudis. The Saudis don't want to see a Shia government in Iraq to link up with Iran. The Saudis don't want that. I mean, they're Sunni, and they have a deep and abiding and rational fear of what would happen. This is just another example of the chaos that George Bush has started in the Middle East. We'll get to that a little bit later. But now, I want to play for you some of this stuff that's been going on at the House Judiciary Committee hearing and the Senate Judiciary Committee. And with Gonzalez, it's astonishing. We're going to start here. The House committee yesterday into Gonzalez's criminal activity, specifically what took place in John Ashcroft's hospital room. Now, the questioner is North Carolina Democrat Representative Mel Watt, and the person answering is FBI Director Mueller. Listen as Robert Mueller contradicts Gonzalez, stating there were reservations in the Bush administration over warrantless wiretaps. As a matter of fact, there were threats to massive resignations within the Justice Department if this program went on without authorization from the Attorney General. Keep in mind that Ashcroft had signed off his duties to Mr. Comey because Ashcroft had gone in for surgery. Now, it's in that context that Gonzalez and the other freak made a beeline, and Andy Card, whoever it was, made a beeline to Ashcroft's office, Ashcroft's hospital room, to try to get what amounts to a backdated signature. And this is what Comey testified about. So here is Representative Mel Watt and Robert Mueller, the FBI director, who is the chief law enforcement officer in the Justice Department.
Mr. Comey says that he phoned you and you agreed to meet him at the hospital, and that you ordered the FBI agents on Mr. Ashcroft's security detail not to evict the acting attorney general from the hospital room. And
I don't dispute what Mr. Comey said in terms of receiving a call requesting by going to the hospital and alerting persons that Mr. Comey wanted to be present during any conversations that were had with the Attorney General.
He further says that that the President met with you and after that meeting emerged to inform Mr. Comey that the President had authorized the changes in the program that had been sought by the Justice Department. You confirmed that's correct also?
I don't dispute what Mr. Comey says.
Okay. Can you confirm that you had some serious reservations about the warrantless wiretapping program that kind of led up to this?
Yes.
Okay. In two answers there, Robert Mueller, the FBI director, confirms that Roberto Gonzalez, the attorney general, committed perjury. By saying, I don't dispute what Mr. Comey says, and by answering yes, that he, Mueller, had serious reservations about the warrantless wiretapping program. In both of those answers, what Robert Mueller is saying is that Alberto Gonzalez committed perjury. Now, the question that immediately pops into the head of a rational human being is, how long will it take for the impeachment against Gonzalez to occur? I mean, they can impeach him, can't they? He's part of the executive branch. Can't they begin impeachment hearings against him? What are the Democratic Party leaders waiting for? We now have, arguably, the four top executives in the country. The president, the vice president, the secretary of state, Condoleezza Rice, and now the Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, all of them involved in a massive conspiracy to destroy constitutional government in this country. All four of them have violated their oaths. Now, the rest of them have too, but just concentrate on these four. What the hell are they waiting for? Now, having just heard Mueller's testimony, today, or yesterday, Tony Snow and this reporter go back and forth over how Robert Mueller's testimony yesterday completely contradicts Torquemada's claim that there was no dispute in the administration over illegally spying on Americans. Now, you just heard Mueller tell Representative Mel Watt that he, Mueller, had personally had serious reservations about the program. And we know Ashcroft, for God's sake, he did as well. Now listen to Tony Snow deny Mueller said what he said. Snow tries to claim that somehow Gonzalez and Mueller had, quote, different definitions, end quote, of the terrorist surveillance program, which is referred to as TSP. Therefore, Mueller did not contradict Gonzalez because Gonzalez's concept of the terrorist surveillance program is magically different from Mueller's understanding of the TSP program. Listen to this.
Are we, in terms of trying to understand this, is what you're telling us is that Director Mueller and Attorney General Gonzalez have differing definitions of the term terrorist surveillance program? It seems as though the answer that's coming from the podium is, We had differing definitions of the term.
Well, let me put it this way. The director of the FBI never once used terrorist surveillance program. It was used in questions to him, and he always said National Security Agent. No, it said National Security Agency.
He was asked directly by Congressman.
One that's been widely discussed.
He said, do you have an understanding that the discussion was on TSP?
And
an understanding the discussion was on an NSA program, yes.
Okay.
We use TSP, we use warrantless wiretapping, so would I be comfortable in saying that those were the items that were part of the discussion? The discussion was on a national NSA program that has been much discussed, yes.
This is one where I don't want to climb into their heads. As I said, he was very careful about his words, and I'm not going to try to read his mind on this, but again, we have been using a very clear and specific definition of TSP, and I can't go any further than that.
Incredible. They're using different definitions. The insanity here is I can't quite explain it or define it, and I don't think you can either. Now, what we're going to play for you right after this next break, is there any chance we can take the break a little bit early? Can we take it early? Okay, let's take it early because I want to get this in before we go out at the top of the hour. And what you're going to hear is a montage of Gonzalez's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee 2 days ago. It is an exercise in utter, total insanity. Stick around. You got to hear this. About 12 before the hour. All right, now this is a working definition of insanity. This is what insanity sounds like when it has coalesced into the brain or the mind of, dear God, the Attorney General of the United States. Listen to this montage of Gonzalez's testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee 2 days ago.
Did you approve for firing?
I think on that, the list that was presented.
No, total. How many names have you approved for firing?
You mean total? For total. Cause, not for cause? I'm not aware, sitting here today, of any other U.S. attorney who was asked to leave, except that there were some instances where people were asked to leave, quite frankly, because there was legitimate cause.
Something's rotten in Denmark. You're saying these were asked to leave because the cause was not legitimate?
What I'm saying is wrongdoing, misconduct. There may have been some. I'm sure there were others.
What kind of misconduct?
Well, and I'm not suggesting any of this conduct happened, but for example, an inappropriate relationship, taking action that is where you have a direct conflict of interest to help out a buddy, making a, you know, those kind of, something like that would constitute misconduct.
Were those specific things involved in any U.S. attorney that was terminated?
No.
Who sent you to the hospital?
Senator, what I can say is we'd had a very important meeting at the White House over one of the most.
I'm answering your question, Senator. Who sent you?
I'll just say that. The Chief of Staff of the President of the United States and the Counsel of the President of the United States went to the hospital on behalf of the President of the United States.
Did the President ask you to go?
We were there on behalf of the President of the United States.
I didn't ask you that. Did the President ask you to go?
Senator, we're there on behalf of the President of the United States.
Why can't you answer that question?
That's the answer that I can give you
Senator.
Well, can you explain to me why you can't answer it directly?
Senator, again, we were there on an important program for this president on behalf of the President of the United States.
If you don't remember...
Wait a minute.
I'm not finished asking you the question. If you don't know or you don't remember what happened when you stood on a decision to have a man executed, that's what you're saying.
I have no specific recollection as to this particular case.
Please help us understand how you didn't mislead the committee.
I think you've misunderstood my response.
The very program that you said there was no dissent to. How can you say you haven't deceived the committee?
Well, I stand by what I said to the committee. What I, in fact, here in the press conference, I did misspeak, but I also went back and clarified it with the reporter.
You did misspeak?
Yes. I can understand the confusion or concern about my prior statements, but I went back and clarified it with a reporter.
When was that? And what was the reporter's name?
The Washington Post. Dan Egan was a reporter. I clarified my statement 2 days later with the reporter.
What did you say to the reporter?
I did not speak directly to the reporter.
Oh, wait a second. You did not. Okay. What did your spokesperson say to the reporter?
I don't know, but I was told the spokesperson to go back and clarify my statement.
And what did that spokesperson say? Tell me now. How do you clarify this?
I don't know, but I'll find
how
out.
How do you
get
clarify?
Back to you.
I've never heard anything quite like this.
How can you get approval from Ashcroft for anything when he's under sedation and incapacitated?
There are no rules governing whether or not General Ashcroft can decide. I'm feeling well enough to make this decision.
But Attorney General Gonzalez, he had already given up his authority as Attorney General.
And
Ashcroft was no longer Attorney General.
And he could always reclaim that. There are no rules
while
about...
While he's in the hospital under sedation?
Again, we didn't know... We knew, of course, that he was ill, but we never had any intent to ask anything of him if we did not feel that he was competent. When we got there... I will just say that Mr. Ashcroft did most of the talking. We were there maybe 5 minutes. It was not about the terrorist surveillance program that the president announced to the American people. Now, I would like the opportunity...
Attorney General, do you expect us to believe that?
I would like to bring to your attention a May 4th, 2006 memorandum. And this one is signed by you. What on earth business does the Office of the Vice President have in the internal workings of the Department of Justice with respect to criminal investigations, civil investigations, and ongoing matters?
As a gentleman, I would say that's a good question.
You're supposed to answer questions. You've not claimed any privilege. I don't think there is any here. And I asked you a question, and you refused to answer it.
I'm interested in an answer to my question.
Let me try to get more information about this, and I really don't know anything.
Let's see if somewhere, somehow, we can find a question you'll answer.
I can't. I'm not going to answer that question.
I do not find your testimony credible.
I'd be happy to take back your question. If we can respond to it, we will.
I don't trust you.
I'd have to get back to you on that.
Everything is obfuscated.
I have no specific recollection.
It's almost an Alice in Wonderland situation.
Thank you for the opportunity for me to look at that.
Not making any progress here. Let me go to another topic.
I can't respond to your question. I can't. I'm not going to answer that question.
I asked you a question, and you refuse to answer.
Sir, I'm not going to answer this question. You know I can't answer that question.
What credibility is left for you?
We'll go back and see whether or not I can answer the question.
What keeps you in the job, Mr. Attorney General?
That's a very good question, Senator.
Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? What's the weather like today?
All right. Now, right on the heels of that, I want to play for you. This is Senator Charles Schumer explaining why he's seeking a perjury investigation of this freak from the Solicitor General of the United States, Paul Clement.
The Attorney General took an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Instead, he tells the half-truth, the partial truth, and everything but the truth. And he does it not once, and not twice, but over and over and over again. His instinct is not to tell the truth, but to dissemble and deceive. Not only that, but this week he contradicted his prior statements, he contradicted the sworn testimony of Jim Comey, and he contradicted a letter written by former Director of National Intelligence John Negroponte. I asked him back in February 2006 at a judiciary hearing whether there was any dissent over the terrorist surveillance program, TSP. He swore that there was not. Then in May of this year, I asked Jim Comey about dissent about classified programs, and he told a story that shocked the country. Virtually the entire leadership of the department was prepared to resign in March 2004, and the Attorney General swore to us that there was no dissent. And these are just the latest in a series of troubling misstatements by our chief law enforcement officer. He testified that he hadn't talked to witnesses about the U.S. attorney investigation, but Ms. Goodling testified that she had a conversation with the attorney general that made her uncomfortable. He also testified in 2005 that there were no abuses of the Patriot Act. We have now learned that when he made those statements, the Attorney General knew about a number of failures to protect rights under the Patriot Act. Enough is truly enough. Not for us, not even for the Senate, but for the 90,000 employees of the Justice Department and for 300 million Americans who need, at the very minimum, an Attorney General who can tell the truth.
At the very minimum, an attorney general who can tell the truth. Dear God. And later today, I think it was today, Arlen Specter, who got his licks in there, the Republican from Pennsylvania on this committee, says that Charles Schumer is politicizing the issue because Schumer is asking for a perjury investigation. Just when you think that maybe one of these Republicans is starting to see what is going on in this country, you realize that you don't see that at all. Thanks, Senator Specter. Thanks a lot, you cowardly little bastard. Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. Yeah, I'm a bit froggy tonight still, but that's all right. Makes me sound more interesting, right? Now, Saudi Arabia. I've got two stories for you here back to back. Here's the first one. This is from... Is today the 27th, Kathy? All right, this is from today, New York Times. And then the other story is from tomorrow. and I believe it's from the same source, New York Times. I may be wrong on that. Here's the first story. During a high-level meeting in the capital of Saudi Arabia about 6 months ago, Saudi officials presented to a top American envoy, Zalmay Khalilzad. You remember him. He was our ambassador to Afghanistan, then he was our ambassador to Iraq, and now I'm not sure what he's doing. I guess he's still the ambassador to Iraq? I don't know. Murderous little bastard, but he speaks Arabic. He was given documents, Khalilzad was, that seemed to suggest that Iraq's prime minister could not be trusted. And that's kind of putting it mildly. One of the documents appeared to be an alert from the Prime Minister, Nouri Kamal al-Maliki, to the so-called radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, warning al-Sadr to lie low during the coming American troop increase, the surge, which was aimed in part at Mr. Sadr's militia. Our boy in Iraq was warning Sadr, Muqtada al-Sadr, who we've been trying to kill and whose people have been trying to kill us, al-Maliki was saying, lay low, stay low. Another document purported to offer proof, the Saudis presented, proof that Maliki is really an agent of Iran. Now, Maliki is a Shiite, and the Iranian leadership is Shiite, and the insurgency is Sunni? Who knows? But the envoy, Zalmay Khalilzad, immediately, he's our boy, immediately protested to the king of Saudi Arabia, and Khalilzad started screaming and stamping his feet and saying that the documents were forgeries. Now, if anyone knows about forged documents, it would be the Bush crime family. But, the Saudis insisted they were not forgeries. Adding, all of this adds to this split between the United States and our Sunni ally in the region, Saudi Arabia. Eh? And now, Bush crime family people are voicing increasing anger at what they say has been Saudi Arabia's counterproductive role in the Iraq War. Some of these unnamed Bush crime family officials say that beyond regarding Mr. Maliki as an Iranian agent, the Saudis have offered financial support to Sunni groups in Iraq. You know, the terrorists. The American military and what's left of our vaunted intelligence agencies say that of the estimated 80 foreign fighters who enter Iraq each month, half are coming from Saudi Arabia. Hello? Is anybody home? They're not coming from Syria. They're not coming from Iran. They're not coming from the occupied territories. They're not coming from Egypt. They're not coming from Lebanon. They're not coming from Canada. They're not coming from Puerto Rico. They are coming from Saudi Arabia. The people who are planting the IEDs to blow up American soldiers who have no business being there to begin with. But they are coming from Saudi Arabia. Now, are we on the verge of bombing Saudi Arabia? Oh, ho, ho, True Seeker, not so fast. Officials in Washington, members of the Bush crime family, will not blame Saudi Arabia for anything. Not for the chaos, not for the sectarian violence, not for the importation of insurgents, not for the murder and mayhem. Remember, of the 19 bombers that came to this country on September 11, 2001, if you believe the official Bush crime family story, 15 of the 19 were Saudis. Remember that the madrasas, these maniacal religious schools in Afghanistan that turns out incipient little terrorists who just can't wait to be martyred by blowing people up, that the madrasas are funded by Saudi Arabia? Don't forget that Osama bin Laden is from Saudi Arabia. Don't forget that 10 days, 6 days, whatever it was, after the attack on this country, the FBI facilitated the removal from this country of dozens of Saudis before the FBI had a chance to interview them, including members of the bin Laden family who are Saudis. And let's also not forget that major Bush crime family financiers, backers, and supporters for decades have been Saudis. Are there any lights going off? Any bells ringing? Any red flags, Truth Seeker, waving anywhere? Our military continues to place the blame of the murder that's going on in Iraq, on Iran and Syria. Our military leaders refuse to talk publicly about the role of Saudi fighters in Iraq. Now, why is that? Is it because our military leadership is stupid? Is it because our military leadership is ignorant? Is it because our military leadership is blind? Or is it because, finally, Bush has gotten what he wants, a totally politicized military leadership in Iraq that will not speak out against the American Führer, no matter what. The Saudi government, you see, has stepped up efforts to undermine the Maliki government and to pursue a different course in Iraq from what the Bush crime family wants. But the Bush crime family, you see, relies on the Saudis for its financial lifeblood and always has. Now, several officials, the Times says, interviewed for this article, said they believed that Saudi Arabia's direct support to the Sunnis increased this year as the Saudis decided that the Maliki government was not the one they wanted in Iraq. And the Saudis, according to these unnamed Bush crime family officials, the Saudis felt that they had to support, bolster, increase the firepower of the Sunni groups in Iraq in this civil war. Now, how is the United States, under the delicate but firm constitutional control of the Bush crime family, how are we reacting to all this news about the government of Saudi Arabia trying to overthrow our puppet boy in Iraq? How is the American government, under the Bush crime family, responding to the fact that the Saudis are providing the firepower and the manpower to kill American soldiers and Marines? How is the Bush crime family responding to all that? Are we threatening to bomb Riyadh like we're threatening to bomb Tehran? Are we threatening to overthrow the kingdom? No, none of the above. When we come back, I'll tell you how the American government, under the Bush crime family, is responding to all this news about the Saudis funding the deaths of American soldiers.
The Mike Malloy Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
21 past the hour. So, the Saudis have provided the U.S., one of our top envoys, Almi Khalilzad, with information that the Iraqi president, so-called, is really an Iranian agent, in order to undermine that fake government. It is not really a government. I don't know what the hell it is. It's a committee, I guess. The Saudis now are providing more than half of the insurgents going to Iraq to kill our people who don't belong there. The Saudis are providing materiel, money, all sorts of support. Now, you would think that the Bush crime family would find that just unacceptable, wouldn't you? I mean, after all, you and I are told to look at Syria, look at Iran, look what they're doing. And there's no proof that they're doing anything. But there's plenty of proof that the Saudis are doing what they're doing. They're killing our people. They're providing the support for IEDs. Now, the latest report that you and I have heard was that Iranians are providing the support for the IEDs. So here's all the information that's provided by the New York Times about the Saudi involvement in this murderous enterprise. So how are we going to react? The Bush administration is preparing to ask Congress to approve an arms sale package for Saudi Arabia that is expected to total $20 billion over the next decade, at a time when some United States officials contend that the Saudis are playing a, cough, cough, counterproductive role in Iraq. Now, this is from tomorrow's New York Times. The Bush crime family is going to give them $20 billion in arms. I'm sorry, not give them. They're going to provide, for, because the Saudis have plenty of money. Now, the proposed package of this weaponry for Saudi Arabia includes advanced satellite-guided bombs, upgrades to its fighters and its new naval vessels. All of this has made Israel and some of Israel's supporters in Congress nervous. Senior officials who described the package on Friday said they believed that the Bush administration had resolved those concerns. Now, how do you suppose they did that, truth seeker? Well, in part by promising Israel $30 billion in military aid over the next decade. Now, the Israelis will get $30 billion in aid. The Saudis will get $20 billion worth of sales. The $30 billion going to Israel is a significant increase. It's about a 46% increase over what Israel has received in the past 10 years. But administration officials, the Bush crime family, remain concerned. Some of the renegade members of the Bush crime family remain concerned that the size of the package and the advanced weaponry it contains could prompt Saudi critics in Congress to oppose the package when Congress is formally notified about the deal this fall. You see, it's not been presented yet. This takes congressional approval. So it's being leaked now to test the waters. In talks about the package, the Bush crime family has not sought specific assurances from Saudi Arabia that it would be more supportive of our effort in Iraq. Now, this package of death, this $50 billion package of death, and the necessary steps to allay Israel's concerns were described to Congress this week in an effort by the Bush crime family to test the reaction on Capitol Hill before entering into final negotiations with the Saudis. The $20 billion price tag to the Saudis is more than double what Bush crime family officials originally said it would be when details became leaked out to the public this spring. And even the $20 billion is a rough estimate that could fluctuate depending on the final package. So this, do you understand this? Of course you do. Of course you do. Of course you do. In defending this sale to Saudi Arabia, Bush crime family officials noted that the Saudis are in talks with weapons suppliers other than the U.S. So therefore, if the packages offered to them by the U.S. are blocked by these liberals in Congress, or come with too many conditions, the Bush crime family says, then Saudi Arabia could turn elsewhere for similar equipment, therefore reducing American influence in the region. Do you see how this works?
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour. Yeah, I didn't read far enough into the article about the Saudis' role in screwing everything up for the Americans. Zalmay Khalilzad, who is first referred to as a top American envoy, he is now our ambassador to the UN. That's right. He was the one that was sent to clean up the mess that Bolton left. But anyway, when it is revealed that the Saudis are working against and always have worked against America's best interest, the Saudis are Sunnis, they are royalists, they don't want anything that even stinks of democracy in their neighborhood. They don't want democracy anywhere near them. But they understand that the American public is addicted to oil. And they understand that we are, and continue to be, and will continue to be, because we're such sapsuckers, because we are the most ignorant people on earth, we will continue to be the biggest customer for Saudi oil on the planet. So it's a game. The Saudis provide us with our oil, and they also provide the wherewithal to kill our people in Iraq. They provide these fanatic Muslim madrasas with the wherewithal to continue to churn out Islamic terrorists. And yes, I'll use that term tonight because I feel like it. Whose sole mission is to become a martyr. How do you do that? Well, you do it by killing Westerners, Crusaders, or Jews. That's how you become a martyr. I'm so sick of this. I'm so sick of it. But you'll notice in the second article where the Bush administration is going to reward these evil bastards with even more weaponry, $20 billion worth. But to keep the Israelis happy, they're going to provide the Israelis with $30 billion worth of aid, military aid. Now, you'll notice right away, if you are like me and at least a high school graduate, you'll notice that the concerns of the Israelis are addressed instantly. Before the proposal is even put before the American public, that is, our representatives in Congress who need to approve this, the concerns of the Israelis are addressed first. Now, is there a possibility here that maybe this deal with the Saudis is not in the best interest of the Americans? Especially not the Americans who are fighting and killing and being killed in Iraq. I maintain that it's not in the best interest of the Americans. Not just the Americans in Iraq, but the Americans in, oh, America. Because what we are doing is, providing the weaponry for more death and destruction and chaos and murder in the Middle East. And since we have a major ally there that in so many issues dictates American policy in that region, the Israeli government, we take care of them before the deal is even presented to the American Congress. What's wrong with this picture, as they used to say? What's wrong with that? There has to be something wrong with that. No? Nothing wrong with that? The Saudis are supportive in killing our soldiers, and we are going to provide them with ever more military aid, but our allies in the region, the Israelis, are concerned. So let's take care of the Israelis. The Americans, screw the Americans. They're too stupid. They're finding out that Lionel Richie's daughter has to go to jail for 96 hours today. Son of a bitch, what is going on here? How much more of this can we take? Seriously. Now, While I catch my breath here, I want you to hear once again the montage of sound that Kathy collected from the hearings on Tuesday, the Senate hearings, where this unconscionable little rat bastard, who happens to be the Attorney General of the United States, for God's sake, Alberto Gonzalez, who is a criminal by any definition. He's a criminal, a thug, a perjurer, a liar. We want you to hear once again a montage of his testimony and questions by Democrats and Republicans alike. All right? Here you are.
How many names did you approve for firing?
I think on that, the list that was presented.
No, total. How many names have you approved for firing?
You mean total? For total. Cause, not for cause? I'm not aware, sitting here today, of any other U.S. attorney who was asked to leave, except that there were some instances where people were asked to leave, quite frankly, because there was legitimate cause.
Something's rotten in Denmark. You're saying these were asked to leave because the cause was not legitimate?
I'm not. No, what I'm saying is wrongdoing, misconduct. There may have been some. In fact, I'm sure there were others.
What kind of misconduct?
Well, and I'm not suggesting any of this conduct happened, but for example, an inappropriate relationship, taking action that is where you have a direct conflict of interest to help out a buddy, something like that would constitute misconduct.
Listen to this.
And there
that, were those specific things involved in any U.S. attorney that was terminated?
No.
Who sent you to the hospital?
Senator, what I can say is we'd had a very important meeting at the White House over one of the most.
I'm answering
your question, Senator.
Who sent you?
If I could, I'll just say that. The Chief of Staff to the President of the United States and the Counsel of the President of the United States went to the hospital on behalf of the President of the United States.
Did the President ask you to go?
We were there on behalf of the President of the United States.
I didn't ask you that. Did the President ask you to go?
Senator, we're there on behalf of the President of the United States.
Why can't you answer that question?
That's the answer that I can give you, Senator.
Well, can you explain to me why you can't answer it directly?
Senator, again, we were there on an important program for this President. On behalf of the President of the United States.
If you don't remember... Wait a minute. I'm not finished asking you the question. If you don't know or you don't remember what happened when you stood on a decision to have a man executed, that's what you're saying.
I have no specific recollection as to this particular case.
Please help us understand how you didn't mislead the committee.
I think you've misunderstood my response.
The very program that you said there was no dissent to. How can you say you haven't... deceive the committee?
Well, I stand by what I said to the committee. What I, in fact, here in the press conference, I did misspeak, but I also went back and clarified it with the reporter.
You did misspeak?
Yes. I can understand the confusion or concern about my prior statements, but I went back and clarified it with a reporter.
When was that? And what was the reporter's name?
The Washington Post. Dan Egan was a reporter. I clarified my statement 2 days later with the reporter.
What did you say to the reporter?
I did not speak directly to the reporter.
Oh, wait a second. You did not. Okay. What did your spokesperson say to the reporter?
I don't know, but I told the spokesperson to go back and clarify my statement.
What did that spokesperson say? Tell me now. How do you clarify this?
I don't know, but I'll find
how
out.
How do you
get
clarify?
Back to you.
I've never heard anything quite like this.
How can you get approval from Ashcroft for anything when he's under sedation and incapacitated?
There are no rules governing whether or not General Ashcroft can decide. I'm feeling well enough to make this decision.
But Attorney General Gonzalez, he had already given up his authority as Attorney General.
And
Ashcroft was no longer Attorney General.
And he could always reclaim that. There are no rules
while
about...
While he's in the hospital under sedation?
Again, we didn't know... We knew, of course, that he was ill, but we never had any intent to ask anything of him if we did not feel that he was competent. When we got there... I will just say that Mr. Ashcroft did most of the talking. We were there maybe 5 minutes. It was not about the terrorist surveillance program that the President announced to the American people. Now,
I would like
Attorney
the opportunity.
General, do you expect us to believe that?
I would like to bring to your attention a May 4th, 2006 memorandum. And this one is signed by you. What on earth business does the Office of the Vice President have in the internal workings of the Department of Justice with respect to criminal investigations, civil investigations, and ongoing matters?
As a gentleman, I would say that's a good question.
You're supposed to answer questions. You've not claimed any privilege. I don't think there is any here. And I asked you a question, and you refused to answer it.
I'm interested in an answer to my question.
Let me try to get more information about this. I really don't know anything.
Let's see if somewhere, somehow, we can find a question you'll answer.
I can't. I'm not going to answer that question.
I do not find your testimony credible.
I'd be happy to take back your question if we can respond to it. Well,
I don't trust you.
I'd have to get back to you on that.
Everything is obfuscated.
I have no specific recollection.
It's almost an Alice in Wonderland situation.
Thank you for the opportunity for me to look at that.
Not making any progress here. Let me go to another topic.
I can't respond to your question. I can't. I'm not going to answer that question.
I asked you a question, and you refused to answer.
Sir, I'm not going to answer this question. You know I can't answer that question.
What credibility is left for you?
We'll go back and see whether or not I can answer the question.
What keeps you in the job, Mr. Attorney General?
That's a very good question, Senator.
Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won the
good
race?
God.
What's the weather like today? What's the weather?
This is the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States. Why don't these people just come out and call this rat bastard what he is? He's a liar. He's a perjurer. He belongs in jail. What is it they can't use the word liar? And by the way, Zalmay Khalilzad, our former ambassador to Afghanistan and Iraq, and now the United Nations, is also one of the original signatories to the documents put out by the Project for a New American Century that advocated the invasion, bombing, endless war. He's our representative to the UN.
Justice and the American way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. Email here from Herman. Mike, if your listeners don't believe you, tell them to pick up the book House of Bush, House of Saud by Craig Unger. Or go to houseofbush.com for more details. Yeah, I remember that came out a couple of years ago, didn't it, Herman? Houseofbush.com, and the title of the book by Craig Unger is House of Bush, House of Saud, and it details the incredibly intricate and involved relationship between these two royal houses, Bush and the Saudis. What I'm going to do here is this is going to be up for the program tonight on a live version. The third hour coming up is going to be a rebroadcast of an hour from Friday a couple of weeks ago. Because if I keep talking here, I'm going to wind up with a total loss of voice. But I had to come on tonight because of this Gonzalez stuff. I mean, this is maddening, absolutely maddening. So thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight, and we'll stick around in the studios in KPHX, our home base in Phoenix, to make sure that this third hour plays out the way it should. Also, thanks to who else? Jeff Farias for filling in for me the last couple of nights. Also, Billy Foster, who is the moderator in the NovaMRadio.com chat room. Oh, and by the way, on the program Monday night, John Leish will be our guest. You can go to leish08.com for more information. He's the guy that ran against, what's his name, Denny Hastert in Illinois. And he's running again, John Leish. It's leesch08.com. for more information. Also, thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, and Catherine Bay, who's our executive producer. Email here from somebody who said, Mike, not to be a pest, since you were away, Michael Vick was indicted. Any commentary from you on this issue? What's your perspective, is, if any? Sincerely, Peter. Well, you know, I live in Atlanta. Michael Vick is was quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons. Michael Vick has been involved in so many little incidents. You know, the marijuana bottle that wasn't really a marijuana bottle. I have no problem with people smoking pot if they're adults. I don't even have any problem with astronauts getting drunk if that's what they feel like doing. I mean, if you're going to sit on top of, you know, $5 or $10 billion worth of taxpayer research and money and be drunk on your ass and take off, well, I guess it's your business, right? But as far as Michael Vick and this indictment, I think what he's accused of doing is horrific. You know, here in the South, the dog fighting, and there's all sorts of variations of that. They put dogs and pigs in the same pen. Cockfighting, all sorts of stuff. People here in the South are just bat guano crazy. I don't know, maybe it's the weather. I have no idea. But the South is and always has been the mental institution of America. And it doesn't make any difference if you're black or white. It doesn't make any difference if you're Jew or Gentile, if you're gay or straight. If you live in the South, odds are you're going to be insane. Now, not everyone here is, but occasionally professional football players who make millions and millions and millions of dollars a year go insane. It's part of the risk of living here in the South. As far as his guilt or innocence, I have no idea. Of course, everything points to his guilt. But it's getting more and more and more difficult for me when somebody is indicted, unless it's a Republican moralizer who claims to be for family values and then gets caught with his name in a hooker's, no offense to sex workers, phone book. That's a little bit different. Or gets caught propositioning, you know, somebody who is virulently anti-gay, a Republican male lawmaker, and then gets caught propositioning a male law enforcement officer. People like that, as far as I'm concerned, they're guilty. They're guilty of dishonesty, and they're guilty of bringing an awful lot of hell onto other people because of their hypocrisy. But as far as Michael Vick, if he's guilty, I hope the full force of the law falls on his ass. I know it won't, because he's very, very wealthy. Very, very prominent figure. A great football player, too, by the way. Probably too much money too soon. I don't know. I can't make evaluations like that. I really can't. If the charges are true, I hope he gets the full force of the law. If the charges against him are not true, then I hope he walks free. And I hope Arthur Blank, who's the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, apologizes for any statements he may have made, although I don't think he's made any that condemns Michael Vick or considers him guilty. I think it's a good idea, since he's been indicted, that everybody is taking a put some distance between me and Michael Vick attitude, whether it's Nike or the Atlanta Falcons or professional football. What else are you going to do? And here I sit talking about Michael Vick. You know, the bottom line to this, except for the dogs that suffered, I don't give a damn about Michael Vick. I really don't. I could not care less about Michael Vick. I don't mean to be a jackass with the answer, Peter, but that's the honest answer. I'll see you Monday night. Take care, everybody. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I'm going straight.
Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. As I told you a few minutes ago, I've decided to take this third hour off this evening and give my voice a rest. So what you're going to hear for the next hour is a rebroadcast of a Friday night show of a couple of weeks ago. I'll see you Monday night with normal voice. Take care. Keep it lit. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Dean in Connecticut writes, subject line, if I ever have a daughter, I want her to be just like Ashley. I hear you. I hear you, Dean. She sounds like an awesome kid, Dean writes. And then he adds, and if I would ever meet the SOB who cussed her out, they'll be fishing his sorry blank, blank, blank out of the river, screaming obscenities at a 10-year-old. Let's hear it for those family values Republicans. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Dean. All right. Where are we? Let's go back to your calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Kevin is calling from Maryland, listening via the Internet. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? I just want to make you aware of the Trojan horse that the Republicans are going to have planned for 2008.
Okay.
And that is basically them funding Hillary left and right. Rupert Murdoch is giving so much money to Hillary Clinton, and the reason behind it is they're trying to recreate what happened in Connecticut last year.
And what was that? What's his name? With Lieberman.
Lieberman.
Yeah.
And basically, they are counting on the most divisive Democrat to win the primary, who is, unfortunately, Hillary Clinton. And the thing is, Hillary, like most politicians, after a while, it becomes more about ego than it becomes more about ego than what is right for the party or for the country.
Is that why she is accepting money from Murdoch? Is that why she's all of a sudden discovered Rupert Murdoch is not the smelly bastard that he really is? Well, how do you explain that relationship between Clinton and
Like I said, the Republicans, you know, I must say, one thing about them, they are probably the greatest chess and poker players of all time.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's not they know they're going to lose the 2008 election.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd rather lose to somebody they can work with, like a Lieberman type.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what basically happened. They knew that basically what happened in Connecticut is that the Republican candidate wasn't going to win the election, so they went with whoever they could, and they backed Lieberman.
Right.
Why do you think Bush kissed him on the forehead last year?
Right. I thought that was a benediction of some sort. All right, so what should people do about Hillary? Make sure she doesn't get the Democratic Party nomination?
No, absolutely not. Well, and the thing is, what's so sad, you know, what's so sad about it is that it's like, why shouldn't there be a female for the Democratic nomination? Unfortunately, we're in a position that we're going to vote for whoever wins the primary is pretty much going to
win. Say it again. You faded there, Kevin. Say that last sentence again.
We're in a position whoever's going to win the primary, the Democratic primary,
will be president.
Will be president.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think pretty much we're in a situation where the presidency is going to be decided on the primary, which is July of next year. And if you notice, and he's been raising money left and right, is John Edwards, but they kind of underplay him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. Hillary Clinton gets an awful lot of media focus because of who she is. Barack Obama gets a lot of media focus because of who he is.
And he's
rather than because of their positions. Now, John Edwards, as you point out, John Edwards has very clear-cut positions on some key issues, but he's not getting the coverage because he's not female and he's not
African-American.
Well, you know, I hate to use that term because Obama has an African parent and a white parent.
Well, so
a black African parent and a white American parent, and yet he's referred to as African American. I hate that, but that's that filthy one drop rule.
Well, you know, we can't help that. You know,
I know.
Being African American is not about what you are, because I'm triracialist, but it's the experience.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. All right, Kevin, I got to move on. Thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. That makes sense. And I hate Hillary even hanging out, even in the same county with this Rupert Murdoch pig. I need to talk to my friend Bart Kopp soon because Bart Kopp is still supporting Hillary, right? Is he? Don't know. And I think Bart Kopp has the second most important website on the internet. I really do. Edie, I'm sorry. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Edie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
How you doing? I know it's a long time, but belated happy birthday.
Thank you.
I almost thought someone would say play Misty for me last week.
Oh, my God.
I called about the corporate takeover of our water, and it has begun. They have 15% of it now, and I'd just like to give you a website and for the listeners.
Sure.
It's called, these people have a book and a movie on a DVD,
mm-hmm.
And just the website alone is just gobs of information. The website is thirstthemovie.org.
Thirstthemovie.org. All right.
And, of course, we are the defenders of democracy.com.
Right.
And, well, that's basically what I wanted to, I've talked with Jeff Farias about this because, uh-huh. you know, they're living there in Satan's anvil.
Right.
In Arizona. So I have talked to him about it, but you have a bigger audience. Someday, God willing, he will too.
Uh-huh.
The metaphorical God, of course. And that's really what I wanted to say, and have a great weekend.
All right, what's the site again? Give it again.
Okay, thirstthemovie.org.
Thirstthemovie.org. All right, thanks, Edie.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Take care. Yeah, the privatization of water hasn't happened to the degree here that it's happened in other parts of the globe, especially Central and South America, my understanding anyway. I don't know about the Asian area, Indian subcontinent, or Africa. Don't know. But or Europe, for that matter. But the privatization, it's a scarce resource. Clean, drinkable water is becoming more and more scarce. So, of course, global corporatization is going to target water. Why not? Jay is calling from Gresham, Oregon. Jay is listening via the Internet. Jay, welcome to the program. Hey, Jay.
Oh, yes.
Hey.
I have a couple reasons for hating Mr. Bush.
All right.
First one is stem cells. I have Parkinson's. I've had Parkinson's like for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if I sound a little funny, that's what it is.
Okay.
But the most important...
Uh-oh. George, you there?
I'm glad I took the other phone off the hook in case I did that.
Okay, you're okay. You're there and you're okay, right?
Okay.
Okay.
The reason I'm calling, though, are you familiar with the Wanta settlement?
The what?
The Wanta, the little Wanta settlement?
I don't think so.
Okay. This is something else that's been going on. I've been following very closely since March of last year, of 06.
Uh-huh.
And it consists of, just real quick, a Reagan Commission, an individual who happened to be the Canadian ambassador to Somali.
Right.
And he commissioned him to bring down the Russian ruble in approximately 1982 or the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
He was successful, and he accumulated for the United States $27.5 trillion.
Uh-huh.
And his settlement that he negotiated with Bush Jr.,
mm-hmm.
Three Supreme Court judges, Paulson, the Treasury Secretary,
right,
among a couple of people,
right.
He went into an agreement that he would settle for $4.5 trillion,
mm-hmm.
which is supposed to be deposited into the U.S. Treasury,
right,
by way of Virginia.
I bet it wasn't.
I bet it wasn't, and he has lied, and he has brought, he's lied to China. China is heavily involved in doing an advance.
Well, here's the thing, Jay, and listen, I got to go. Thanks, I appreciate it. Here's the thing. This stuff is going to come back,
and eat these people alive at some point. You know it. I know it. We all know it. Thanks, Jay. I appreciate what you had to say. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. We'll be right back.
Worry about anything here in Washington, D.C.
From A.E., Mike, I didn't hear if you mentioned that George W. was speaking to members of the West Virginia National Guard on July 4th. He made reference to the Revolutionary War taking six more years for victory after the Declaration of Independence was signed. He didn't seem to remember that the Revolutionary War was won by people who repelled an invading empire. The invaders weren't the victors. Well, yeah, A.E., but you got to remember, George Bush is a moron, and consequently he thinks the people he talks to are morons. And to a large extent, so many of them are. And this is from Sarah, a founding member, Nova M founding member from North Carolina. She writes, regarding doing nothing except standing and wearing an enough T-shirt, which is Wesley Clark Jr.'s idea. Sarah writes, my favorite Buddha quote is, do nothing. Time is too precious to waste. Well, I'll say big old Southern Baptist amen to that, Sarah. Back to your calls. George is calling from Denver, listening via the Internet. George, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I would have called you Sunday, but I don't have your home phone number.
That's true. You don't.
Hey, I was a founding member on the very first day before my eyes were even open.
Oh, yeah?
So I was right there.
Well, thank you.
And you were the first person I've ever talked to on the radio.
Oh, my God.
And it happened about 3 days before they slit your throat. At Air America for telling the truth.
At Air America, yeah, that was a great experience at Air America.
And then I went back and listened to all your IE stuff, and I mean all of it.
Oh, my God.
To get me through the summer.
Oh, my God.
Hey, one other thing. Did you know that AirTran is Value Jet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, I knew that. That's the only airline I fly, is AirTran.
I know that.
Yeah.
I know
what happened in the Okefenokee.
Okay.
I'll never forget those pictures of that plane about 30 feet underwater and everybody dead. But, because of that, as far as I'm concerned, it is the safest airline there is to fly. And that wasn't pilot error or structural problems. That was because some moron loaded that cargo compartment with stuff that could explode. So, I only fly AirTran now, and you know what I like about it? Their jets are all new, A. B, somehow, I don't know the engineering behind this, and I hope nobody writes me and tells me what it is, because my mind goes blank. But fresh air comes into the cabin, even at 39,000 feet, which is where I spend a lot of time cruising when I'm going around the country. But you get fresh air into the cabin, into the passenger cabin. I love that. Plus, I think they're. I sound like I'm doing a commercial for AirTran. I love their employees. I love their. Their crew. So.
Well, I just wanted to make sure you knew.
Oh, sure. But thank you. Thanks a lot, George.
I'm still terrified of flying, so I don't fly. But.
No, I understand that. I spent a lot of years being terrified of flying until I talked with a listener from Santa Fe who was a long distance pilot. He flew the Trans-Pacific flight. To Australia, to New Zealand, to various points way out in the Pacific, and he just made it very clear to me that airplanes love to fly. Plus, I'll tell you, I found a new website. It's all about turbulence because turbulence drives me crazy. You know, I'll be flying. And the plane will start to bounce a little bit, and I'm immediately looking for the parachute that's not there, of course. But there's a website, and it's called Turbulence. This guy who is a nervous flyer, like you, like me, and it's called TurbulenceForecast.com. TurbulenceForecast.com. And if you go to this website on the day you're going to fly, you can see where the turbulence is. And if it's not in your flight path, you can just kick back and relax. Don't be afraid to fly. I mean, that's easy to say, but don't be afraid to fly.
But that isn't why I called.
Oh, damn. All right.
I want, you know, all your listeners are wondering, well, how could these criminals be at every post throughout our entire government in just 6 measly years?
6 years, right.
And you know what? There's a lady. She's in her grave right now. Yeah. So she's desperately trying to tell everybody why.
From the grave?
From the grave.
And my God.
But her name is Madeline Brown. Google it.
All right, hold on. Hold on a second. I got a break here, George. Hold on. I did all the talking, so hold on until we come back after the break. We'll talk about Madeline Brown. From the grave. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, we're talking with George, who has called in from Denver, about Madeline Brown, a video. Now, George, people ought to know that Madeline Brown was, the girlfriend or the mistress of LBJ, who died about 5 years ago, who said that LBJ and H.L. Hunt were the ones behind the assassination of Kennedy. At least the planning of it, right?
Right. And did you know they had a son together, LBJ and Madeline Brown?
I did not.
And when LBJ died, her son decided he wanted a piece of the pie because his dad was the president. So he put in a claim for $10
million. Yeah.
And Lady Bird went after him, and she screwed with his military records, gave him a dishonorable discharge, and really screwed him. And then he died of cancer.
Uh-huh. Kind of like the way Jack Ruby did.
Well, probably. But Madeline Brown was so mad at what they did to him that she sat in her backyard for 80 minutes and she told everything. And I mean everything.
Yeah, she gave an interview, right?
And basically she said, well, there was a big party the day before Kennedy got it. And LBJ was there, Nixon was there, George H. Bush was there. And when they came out of the meeting, LBJ went up to her and said, them SOBs, Kennedys, won't screw with me again after tomorrow.
Right. Now, let me ask you, do you believe all this?
100%. In fact, if you look at it, these are the same criminals back then that we have today, and it joins everything together. Look, we had Vietnam, which was a lie.
Yeah.
You know, the Gulf of Tonkin was nothing but a big lie.
Right.
And did you know that LBJ was just about to be indicted for taking kickbacks from the agricultural industry?
No.
And there were four people that were going to testify against him. And when he became president, he rushed there to stop that investigation. And then these four guys ended up killing themselves.
Oh, my God. I just want to go someplace and pull the covers over my head.
But these guys have had 50 years to plan everything. And they are criminals and murderers. And we need to stop them. But I think if people understand this Madeline Brown thing, it'll help them. Understand how far back. This doesn't go back to 2000. This goes back to 1963.
Yeah. All right.
But I love you, Mike Malloy.
Thanks, George. Thanks for starting out with the value jet thing, too. All right. Thanks, George. I don't know what to believe anymore. So here's what I do. this stuff about LBJ keeps coming up, and I don't have any reason to doubt it any more than I have a reason to believe it. It's all just astonishingly complex to me. Any government that will do what the government of the United States has done over the course of its history will do anything because it's already done anything. So nothing surprises me, Democrat or Republican. And I think that's probably a defining characteristic of power. So, but here's what I do when it becomes too much. Every night before we come to the studio, which is right here in our home, we put Molly to bed. Three stories up, we have kind of a... It's a pretty big house, and it has three or four stories. So we put Molly to bed up on the third story. And the way we do that, Kathy goes up and reads her a story. Fairy tale, some of the kid books, whatever. And then Kathy says goodnight to Molly, and then I go up. And I tell her a story, and I make something up. And it just works out real well for us. Kathy reads to her. I tell her a story. And at some point, while I'm telling her the story, we'll play the monster game. And the monster game is very simple. Molly brings it up. She'll say, "Do you hear a monster?" And I'll say, "I don't think so." And Molly will say, "Listen." And then we both hear a monster. So what do? We grab the blankets and pull it over our heads. And we lay under the blankets and giggle and laugh about the monster. Now, somehow, that's the way Molly has dealt with what every kid deals with. Monsters in the closet, monsters under the bed, monsters in the Oval Office, monsters running the military, whatever the case is. So we play this little game, and then... Eventually, it just kind of winds down and she goes to sleep. And then Kathy and I begin the program. And what I envy about Molly's ability to play that game is she can put everything that bugs her. And believe me, when you're a three-year-old, things bug you. You know, starting with your parents. I think a three-year-old understands that her parents love her. But her parents are the ones that are always saying, "No, don't do that," or yelling at her, or saying, "Stop it! You want to go to your room?" You know, all the stuff that parents do. So here's Molly, who deals with all the ghosts and monsters in her life by very simply pulling the covers over her head. Now, when you pull the covers over your head, think back. When you pull the covers over your head, you're perfectly protected. Nothing can get you. Nothing. There's not a goblin or a monster or a beast that can penetrate the covers. You know that. We knew that. You knew that when you were a kid. I knew it when I was a kid. Even when we had the duck and cover drills, when we knew about nuclear bombs were going to turn us all into molecules floating off into space. We also knew that if we got under the covers, everything would be okay. But, you know, the older you get, the further removed from that you become, and it becomes just a childhood thing, unless you have a three-year-old, kid, grandkid, doesn't matter. Now, I would suggest to our listeners out there who are in their 20s and 30s and 40s who have their first three-year-old, I'm kind of the exception because I'm so old and I have a three-year-old. But if this is your first go-around, your second go-around with a three-year-old kid, and you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, and you know, you feel that anxiety that we all feel most of the time, watch how your kid deals with it. Monsters! Ah! Under the cover. Total, complete protection. It's like Ronald Reagan's fantasy about the Strategic Defense Initiative, the shield over America, to protect us from everything bad that might be coming from the dirty, rotten, evil empire. Remember that? So that's all the covers are, is an SDI. It's a shield to keep the monsters out. All right? So when I hear about LBJ planning the assassination of JFK, and I know that Nixon was involved in it, and George Herbert Walker Bush, and H.L. Hunt, and all these crazy, crazy people from Texas, I just pulled the covers over my head. What else are you going to do? All right, back to your phone calls. Prez is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, Prez.
Hey, Mike. How you doing there?
Do you ever pull the cover? Do you ever pull the covers over your head?
I did the duck and cover.
You did the duck and cover. Yeah.
I remember walking home from sixth grade, seventh grade in Oklahoma, and there'd be a guy in the shopping center, the little strip mall.
Yeah.
He would be selling fallout shelters. And we would make him mad. We'd one of us would distract him. He'd guy climb down in there and start messing with stuff, and he'd get all pissed off.
I'll bet he would.
But I was just thinking about, you know, you can throw the name Clint Murchison in there as well.
Uh-huh.
One of the Dallas oil men. See, Kennedy, one reason he got killed was he was going to let the Iraqis have more of their oil in 1961, and they just could not allow that.
Really?
British Petroleum had a limit on the oil they could pump, and I think it was like something like 10%. They could only sell that much of it to on their own market. They had to give the rest of it to oil companies at a discounted price, you know.
Well, that's kind of what they're doing now.
Hey, how about that, huh?
With the Iraq oil law.
I got to hold on a second, Mike. I'm just totally shocked. Wait a minute. I'm almost speechless.
Yeah.
I had another couple things to talk about.
Sure.
But talking about LBJ and JFK, I mean, that was the beginning of my political education. And then when I joined the Marines in 66 and went to Vietnam, that kind of was a really good education right there. That was in about 3 years I spent in the military. That was about a 10-year education.
I'll bet it was.
And I wanted to say that there's a book called Official and Confidential, The Secret Life of J. Edgar Hoover, written by the guy that wrote the book Marilyn, about Marilyn Monroe. I think his name is Anthony Summers.
Uh-huh.
And that is an amazing, it has it all in there.
Is it true that Marilyn Monroe and J. Edgar Hoover wore the same dress size?
Well, no. Actually, I think his was considerably larger.
I think
but
it was.
Roy Cohn.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
A sheath. I think it was kind of a sheath type affair.
I think it was
like the dress that Jack Lemmon wore in Some Like It Hot.
I think it was. Guess
but considerably
what?
Larger.
I've talked you out of time. We got to go.
Oh.
Thanks, Prez.
I had another couple thoughts about Edwards.
We'll catch you on the next go-around. Thanks, Prez. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
We're being led by some wise souls, determined to put the mark into democracy. The decisions they're making are much too big for you or me. So, facing the tide of negative news, liberal lies, and left-leaning views that our enemies would spread.
It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and answered your calls at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. Thanks also to our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Billy Foster is a moderator at the NovaAmRadio.com chat room. And remember, XM satellite listeners can hear the second 2 hours of this program beginning Monday coming on Channel 167. And, of course, on Sirius, the Internet, and the stations that they carry the program. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. Karen is calling from Ventura, California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Mike. It is Karen.
And my gosh, did I get an earful? The Madeleine Brown story, LB, all that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had some things I wanted to say to you, but I'm blown away by all that. So
I know.
First of all,
well, apparently, apparently, when you have time, check out the YouTube interview with it. It's at YouTube, Madeleine Brown, and just check it out. Somebody sent me a link. Mary sent me a link. It's probably worth just watching, just for the sheer hell of it.
I am going to do that.
Okay.
I definitely will. But you know, your house sounds wonderful, and having you know, your 3-year-old under the covers. When monsters appear, that's
yeah.
what we all do as parents. But as adults, we have to face the monsters.
I know.
We have to do that. But I just wanted a synopsis of your show tonight. Number one, when Chuck called, I think he was the truck driver, and he said
yeah.
the tide will turn. He wanted to communicate with, you know, people in his circle. Excellent. And he
right.
said he'd do it with intelligence. He needs to know what he's talking about. That's what we can all do.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to people we know with intelligence. And then thank you so much, Wes Clark's statement. I went to that and I sent it to everybody in my area that I know. I may be the only one, like you, standing on the corner,
uh-huh.
but I will be there with my sign that says enough.
I'm gonna do that, Karen. I that just intrigues me enough. That I'm going to do it. I think it's a great idea, and I appreciate the information from our North Metro Atlanta correspondent, Sharon, who's a big fan of Wesley
Sharon.
Clark's, obviously. But,
yeah,
yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do that.
Why not? And the numbers will grow. We've done everything we can. We write letters. We've demonstrated in the streets in mass. But maybe simple signs like enough.
That's
is
it.
Enough. I hope so.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for the reminder that General Electric and NBC News are tied at the hip.
Yeah, they are.
And
yeah,
one last word, everybody, check out Gravel. Why not?
You know, we're going to have, he's going to be a guest on this program. When, Kathy? Next week?
All right.
I think it's Wednesday coming. Mike Gravel is going to be on this program.
Good.
All right?
Thank you.
All right, Karen. Take care. Appreciate your call. David is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Quake. Hey, David.
Oh, hi, Mike. You know, I was interested in that last caller who had been talking about the LBJ ties to the JFK assassination. And there's a book about J. Edgar Hoover called Act of Treason. And it talks specifically about J. Edgar Hoover's role in the it was the Bobby Baker scandal that the guy was talking about. And it's kind of interesting because, as many people know, J. Edgar Hoover was blackmailing almost every politician in D.C.
Yes.
And so it was, if I remember right, it was like 1958, 2 years before the 1960 election, when LBJ started to get caught up in that Bobby Baker scandal. Bobby
uh-huh.
Baker was LBJ's bagman.
Right.
And so it was known, even though LBJ was a very powerful guy, I think he was the Speaker of the Senate, or the Senate Majority Leader,
uh-huh.
he was very powerful in the Senate, and Kennedy knew he had to have his support in order to get elected, but he knew he was getting caught up in this Bobby Baker thing, so it was as if he was able to elevate Lyndon Johnson to vice president in order to keep him sort of protected, but also to keep him under his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And so J. Edgar Hoover was essentially walking his dog every morning with LBJ, and he was keeping him on a string about the Bobby Baker investigation, and he was able to keep John F. Kennedy kind of in a tight mode because he had the vice president in the squeeze. It was a very interesting thing, but this the convention he was talking about the night before Kennedy was assassinated, there was a Pepsi bottlers convention in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And J. Edgar Hoover was there, Lyndon Johnson, I'm trying to
God.
Think. There were a whole bunch of different right-wing kooks that were there.
H.L. Hunt, I'm sure.
Yeah, they were all, it was all a very squirrely, and there were some History Channel programs about the assassination, and one of them did talk about that Pepsi convention. And,
mm-hmm.
Let's see, Richard Nixon's flight, he was taken off out of Dallas that morning. of November 22nd, the very day he was in Dallas, the very day that Kennedy was killed. And for many years, it was almost 10 years before he even admitted that he was in Dallas that same day. He would always say he forgot where he was and couldn't remember and all of these sort of things. But it's a very squirrely thing. And if you look up George Bush and Parrot, P-A-R-R-O-T-T, there's a George Bush was actually trying to blackmail one of his political Republican political enemies essentially trying to crush him with some sort of machinations. There's an FBI file about George Bush Sr. and a guy named Parrot. He was trying to crush him by accusing he was involved in the assassination.
David, I'm going to have to ask you to pause here because we're out of time.
Hey, no trouble. Have a good night.
All right, sir. And I've got to go open a vein. No. It's time to get under the covers, right? I'll see you Monday night, y'all. Take care. Have a good weekend. Thanks for participating in the program, however you did that this week. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm going straight.
Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.